There is an examination coming. Yes, it's true. An examination will ensue, but don't worry. You don't have to study for it. Didn't you hate that in school? You had to study for examinations. I would rather have surprise quizzes that you don't have to study for. You just do the best you can in the spur of the moment. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another week of the Revelation series. We're in Revelation chapter 20, and the examination that we will be under, that is, beneficiaries of at the dais of Christ. You don't have to study for it. Your life is it. That's why you try to do the best you can, but you can only do so much. And I just thought of a great verse along this line. I'm going to go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Actually, I'm not going back to it. I was in chapter 3 on Friday. I'm going to go to chapter 4. But there's a verse in Romans 12:3 that is a really strange wording in the Concordant version. But when I figured out what it meant, it was a delivering verse. It was a freeing verse. And I'm going to launch with this verse because it'll help you as I go into 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Why am I here if I'm doing a series on the book of Revelation? Is because I'm contrasting our experience with the experience of those who rise at the great white throne to be judged by God. We are not judged. We are given awards. We are applauded. Fire will take away our impurities. It won't hurt. I asked somebody one time when I was a young one in Christ. I asked a mature man in the Lord. I said, concerning this experience at the dais, fire will be testing each one's work. I said, will it hurt? I think I said it like that too. Will it hurt? And the guy said, no, it's not going to hurt. We're going to be immortal at the time. That's where I got this stuff. I learned this stuff. I didn't just dream this stuff up. I learned it from the scriptures and from other people helping me and from the writings of smart people commenting on the scriptures. Will it hurt? It's not going to hurt because you're going to be immortal and you're going to welcome it. Romans 12:3. For I am saying through the grace which is given me to everyone who is among you, not to be overweening above what your disposition must be, but be of a sane disposition as God parts to each the measure of faith. Odd verse. I did not expect to be here. I turn on the microphone and things like this happen. Things occur to me and the neurons are firing and I needed to go here. Not to be overweening above what your disposition must be. So you are to have a certain disposition. You are to have a certain flair, a certain aptitude, a certain degree of proficiency, but you're not supposed to overween. That is, to try to get more out of something and overween, you know, like when a baby suckles on its mother and the mother would pull it off of her breast. And the analogy there is a little obtuse. I admit I'm struggling with it right now. It's the thought of forcing something to happen prematurely before its time. And we can tend to do that when we want to strive for perfection. Paul is talking about running this race, and he's talking about beware how you're building on the foundation. And you can get stressed out about that. And Paul, here in Romans chapter 12, which is a chapter on behavior, he's saying don't overween. Don't force something above what your disposition must be. There's a disposition each of us has. Paul said, I have my disposition. I'm like a major competitor. I'm competing for the gold medal. You guys are competing for second and third place. Great. I'll never forget the story I heard about Larry Bird, the great basketball player, of course, for the Boston Celtics. And he went into the three-point shooting competition during the All-Star break. And he was the master at three-point shots. And there's a competition at every All-Star game where the greatest players in the league compete. He always wins. He walked into the locker room before the event and he said, which one of you assholes is going to finish second? Love that line. There's a man who's confident. That's Paul. Which one of you assholes is going to finish second. Well, Paul's got the prize. So we if you're trying to be a Paul, if I'm trying to be a Paul, then, and if we're overweening it, if we're trying to get ourselves off of our flesh or off of this, you know, or into the Spirit at a rate that is not according to God, we're going to crash and we're going to burn. Because Paul wants us to be of a sane disposition. And if there's anything that's going to take away your sane disposition is to push something to compete for, like you want to be a bodybuilder or something, let's say. And you want to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, there's a lot of DNA involved there, my friends, not to mention steroids. But you're not only going to be able, you can improve your body, but you're only going to be able to do so much with what you have. So don't overwean above what your body must be, because you will go insane. You will never reach that goal. I'm not trying to scale down your expectations here. I'm just trying to scale down your expectations here. Because God parts to each the measure of faith. Paul had faith for his task. We have faith for ours, and we do go up to the limit. And here's where the wisdom comes in, where you push it, but you don't overpush it. This is the same way when you're training your body. You want to lift, you want to strain your muscles, but you don't want to overstrain them or you will injure yourself. Don't injure yourself trying to be a superhero of faith. Be the hero of faith that you are. Isn't that a happy little message? Well, yeah, I think it's practical and I think it is happy. Now, in chapter 4 of 1 Corinthians, yeah, that's it, of 1 Corinthians. There's nothing after that. Paul says, "Let a man be reckoning with us as deputies of Christ and administrators of God's secrets," speaking of himself and Apollos, those who worked with him in the evangel. Here, furthermore, "It is being sought in administrators that any such may be found faithful." See, that's what led me to Romans 12:3. God parts to each the measure of faith. "Now to me, it is the least trifle that I may be examined." This word is important because we're looking at an examination at the dais of Christ when we are examined by God. That word strikes fear into our hearts now when you go into a doctor's office for an examination. It's scary. You don't want to do it. You don't want to go because they're going to probe you. It's going to be very uncomfortable. You're going to be cold. Things are going to be cold, hard, and heartless. But God's examination is loving and it's kind. And Paul was willing to wait for that day. This is why he says, "It's the least trifle to me that I may be being examined by you or by humans' day." Many people examined Paul and they looked for faults in his service. And Paul says, look, he gets to this here later. I'm not aware of any faults in my service, but there could be some. I don't know. You can examine me all you want. It doesn't make any difference to me because God himself's going to examine me and he's going to do it right. And he's going to find out if there were flaws with my service. And if there have been, I'll own them. I'll own those flaws and I'll say, yes, those were flaws, get rid of them. I love this honesty of this guy here. And what he's saying is do not examine things before the time. We will serve no wine before it's time. You remember that commercial? That was Orson Welles, wasn't it? We will serve no wine before it's time. Well, we will judge no life before it's time. And don't judge yourself either. Paul's going to say that here. It's the least trifle to me that I may be being examined by you or by man's day, human's day, literally. But neither am I examining myself. So Paul's not even stressing over his call. He's racing for the gold, but he knows that he's still in flesh and that he's got problems. He can't overcome all his problems. I think I know what some of Paul's problems were. You want me to tell you? Okay, I will. I think Paul had two problems. I think Paul was an angry son of a bitch. I think that he really had a short fuse. And I think that he wrestled with this his entire life. Yes, even after his conversion, Paul did not become perfect. In fact, he had a thorn in the flesh that he begged God to take from him. And God said, Jesus said, he begged Jesus, I think it was, Jesus said, no, my grace is sufficient for you. Some people think that was some kind of physical infirmity. I'm like, what? A physical infirmity wouldn't bother this guy. He's an ex-Pharisee. He's all about being a good person, a person that appears good to everyone. So any kind of sin in his life would have really driven the guy crazy, and he knew it would compromise his walk. Look at the explosion he had with Barnabas. That's what makes me think this. You remember that little tiff Paul and Barnabas had? Barnabas wanted to take his nephew Mark on a missionary journey. Paul said, nope, not going with that guy. He abandoned us in Cyprus after we left Antioch. And so, no. Barnabas says, well, if you don't want to take Mark, then I'm not going either. Paul says, great, who needs you? Bye now. Ooh, and they recoiled from one another. Paul could be a tough cookie, and I think he was. I think his other problem was impatience, because he's always looking for growth, and I don't think he's very patient with himself, and I think impatience probably haunted all his dreams, to quote Mickey Dolenz in The Monkees. I think that Paul had to keep telling himself that growth happens in the timing of God. And so I think that there are other things that I don't have time to go into here of why I think Paul was impatient. But I mean, to a great degree, he overcame these things, but not completely. See, and we overcome things too, but not completely, because we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the transcendence of the power may be of God and not of us. That's in the Bible, what I just quoted you. And if you read the entire Bible, you will eventually come upon that verse. I think it's 2 Corinthians 4:7. I always get that one mixed up. So Paul says it's no big deal to be judged by you. But he says, for of nothing am I conscious as to myself. So I'm not sure. But not by this am I justified. So Paul says, just because I'm not aware that there are flaws in my service doesn't mean there aren't. Now he who is examining me is the Lord. When does this happen? At the dais of Christ. We're examined, not judged. The unbelievers are examined at the great white throne. That is a judgment. Now I'm looking at our examination. Tomorrow, I think I will talk to you about those at the great white throne and what they will go through. As I said, it's a little bit more uncomfortable for them than it is for us, because we are immortal. That's another difference. We're immortal under our examination. They are not. They're not immortal. They just woke up from the grave, and they're still susceptible to the grave again. Some of them will be going into the second death, where they will die. Death? Die? Death? Die? Yes, I'm a spiritual genius. It's true. I make sense for a living, in case you didn't know. So, he who is examining me, Paul says, I'll close with this, verse 5, he who is examining me is the Lord. So that be not judging anything before the season, be not judging anything before the season, till the Lord should be coming, who will also illuminate the hidden things of darkness and manifest the counsels of the hearts. And then what? And then this, applause will be coming to each one from God. There it is. And then applause will be coming to each one from God. You see how you got nervous when I'm talking about this examination? Paul says, it's not the least trifle to me to be examined by you or by man's day. I'm not even examining myself. I'm not aware of anything about me that's screwy, but it could be. I'm not justified by my own opinion. I'm going to stand before Christ, because he who is examining me is the Lord, so that be not judging anything before the season till the Lord should be coming. I've known people who are afraid of the coming of the Lord because they were filled with fear, given that fear by their religions, the people that were leading them, the pastors and the priests. I mean, the coming of the Lord is a scary thing. It's not for us. It's a wonderful thing. Paul's talking about it here. He's talking about, till the Lord should be coming, who will illumine the hidden things of darkness? That sounds scary. And manifest the counsels of the hearts. Oh no, what if my heart has been impure? What if I had an impure thought? What if some good thing I did was nevertheless motivated by an impure motive? Well, not to worry, because, and then, applause is going to be coming from each. So, for each one, applause, what's that word? Applause will be coming to each one from God. So, okay, I have this dark thing in my heart, let's say, it's all theoretical, I don't have any, and let's say that that this is manifest, and the dark thing of the heart was manifest, it was brought up to the surface, and I'm like, oh, I don't know where that came from, and everybody has a good laugh, and then the fire of the Lord comes, burns it up, and then what happens? Fantastic, Zender, what? They're going to applaud for me. I'm going to get applause from God. Yeah, applause will be coming to each one from God. Now, God doesn't have hands. And he certainly can't put them together, and they don't make noise. But this is a figure of speech that is going to be praise and acceptance and great job. And the applause may be literal in this way. It might be coming from God through beings who do have hands or appendages that can be put together to make noise. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord. Something has to happen with noise. Here. It's been a great celebration. A big ruckus is going to be made over you and the dark things of your heart. They're going to be exposed and poofed out of existence, and then you will be happy and the applause will be coming. That's the result of all this examination, the applause of God for us. God is going to applaud for us, probably through beings who have applause-enabled appendages, and they will smack these together, make a happy noise, and boy, are we going to be happy as a result.